All right, welcome to the latest episode of the Coleman Power Organic Fitness Podcast. All right, I have the wonderful, I'm going to say, Janet Lamb, all the way from County Monaghan, another blue and white county, Waterford Abu. And the result of that is she has a master's degree, more so a master's herbalist that has an interest in all things health. All right, after that, I'm going to say, Janet, say hello to the listeners.
Hello, how are you? Yeah, so I have a licentiate in herbal medicine because I don't want to offend anybody with a master's. So it's licentiate, which is kind of the equivalent. So yeah, I'm all the way up in Monaghan here and I'm really happy to be on your show. This is my first podcast ever. So this is very exciting for me.
I definitely won't be your last. I suppose you massively, I'm going to say, impressed me with all your knowledge and your enthusiasm on all things, I'm going to say, health and herbs. Where we met first in, I'm going to say, the lovely county of Leitrim, at an event, yeah, retreat that they were doing there. And yeah, I suppose that's why I invited you on, because you've a wealth of knowledge. And I suppose we're going to expand on, firstly, tell us a little bit how you got into it, and then we can further go into how herbs and medicine can be, I suppose, used for people who are looking for overall health.
Yeah, so I got into herbal medicine back, I was actually traveling at the time, I was living abroad. And I was like reaching that stage in life. I was about to turn 30 and I was like, oh, what am I doing with my life? I was just having one of those existential crises. But I've always been really interested in natural healing, and always from I was a child, just making up little concoctions and potions of things, and always just loved kind of tinkering about with that type of thing. So then I suppose I just kind of turned that childhood hobby into something I could do as an adult. So I started studying herbal medicine, and then the rest is history, really. I got my licentiate last year and have been practicing ever since. And then part of the 4-year course in herbal medicine was, after 2 years, I got a diploma in nutrition and iridology. So it's kind of a lovely little collection of skills that I acquired by the end of the course that I'm now lucky enough to get to do as my job. So that's kind of the long and short of how I got into it. So yeah.
I suppose we're just coming into the likes of the spring and the warmer months and longer evenings. Are there any, I suppose, either herbs or that you would even recommend to people to look out for and the benefits of them?
Yeah, absolutely. So this time of the year is probably my favorite time of the year because, well, first of all, we celebrate St. Bridget, and St. Bridget was a herbalist. And when you read about her and her life and her history, she is one of the inspirations that kind of led me down this path. So she basically would have known how to use the herbs that are growing at this time of the year to help people heal and help people come out of the darkness and into the light, which is what spring is all about. So when you live in sync with nature and you observe what grows at what time of the year, you learn that the herbs that are growing at that time for a very particular reason. So during spring, the herbs that start to emerge are herbs that naturally help to enhance the function of our lymphatic system, of our kidneys, of our liver. So these are all herbs that will give us a helping hand when it comes to detoxing from the kind of stodgy diet that we typically subsist off of during the winter months. And we've always been that way. Winter historically was a time, you know, before we had everything readily available, winter was a time whenever we would have lived off, there wasn't much to forage, so we would have lived off of a lot of kind of cooked foods and smoked and cured meats, and there would have been very little fresh foods or fresh herbs available. So nature is just really clever, and so in springtime it knows that we need a little bit of help kind of getting back into balance after that period of time. So the herbs that you see growing now are herbs that are going to really enhance your detoxification. So that would be things like, well, it's a little early for fresh leaves. It'll be another 2 to 3 weeks. You'll start seeing things like fresh nettle leaves, dandelion leaves, cleavers. Cleavers and nettles actually always grow together. You'll always see them with each other. I like to think of them as like best friends or sisters or something like that. So when you're harvesting your fresh nettle leaves, make sure to harvest a few cleavers as well whilst you're at it.
Even tell people what the cleavers are, so some people might even know them a slightly different name.
Okay.
And
sorry, you kind of forget to
use. I'll try to slow you down.
So cleavers are also known as sticky backs. I've heard people call them sticky willies. So yeah. Yeah, that's what they're known as up here. I actually gave a talk for St. Bridget's Day in Monaghan last week, and I was trying to explain what cleavers were, and a woman in the audience was like, "Sticky willies." So everybody knew what I was talking about whenever she said that. So cleavers are the things that you would have, when you're younger, walking home from school, you pick them up out of the hedge and stick them to the back of your friend's jumper and say nothing and laugh behind their back. Those are cleavers. So cleavers are amazing lymphatic cleansers. So they're absolutely brilliant for anybody who, if you have any type of puffiness, a lot of people find when they wake up first thing in the morning, particularly around their eyes, can be really puffy, or they might notice that if you wear rings, the rings feel a lot tighter on your fingers. That's a sign of edema, which is a sign that your body is holding on to fluid. And our lymphatic system isn't like our heart or our lungs. It doesn't have a pump to automatically keep it going. We need to manually pump the lymphatic system to make sure that we are draining all those toxins out of the body. Physically, you do that through things like deep breathing, exercising, running, particularly jumping up and down, skipping, trampolining, things like that. But when it comes to herbs, cleavers come in and really help you to move that lymph along. So if you're somebody who's prone to puffiness or fluid retention, go out and get yourself some cleavers now in springtime. And they're super easy to use as well. So what I do with them is just a cold infusion. So fill up a jug of water and give your cleavers a good rinse, and literally just put the cleavers directly into the jug of water. Leave that jug of water in the fridge overnight. In the morning, take the cleavers out, and the water will have infused with the medicinal properties of the cleaver, and it gives the water this amazing, fresh, really clean taste. It tastes like drinking cucumber water, and it's so easy to do. Like, who can't do that? There's basically no steps to it at all. So that's one of my favorite spring herbs.
Such an easy one. Yeah. And as you say, some people say, oh my God, I find it really difficult to grow whatever it may be. Cucumbers, as you say, it's very similar and comparable to, and for the most part, you sow those in April, harvest them to the likes of the summer months, and they must be growing a polyzone. You're training up a string line or else either a pole. As a result of that, you're taking off the side shoots. But you can literally just go to your back garden, cleavers you've been sticking on the likes of your friends or your neighbors, jumpers since you were a kid, put them in a jug. 24 hours later, next morning, you're taking the cleavers out, pouring it into your water, and drinking that down, which is literally the simplest way to improve your health. And myself and Jeanette will be of the exact same, I suppose, wavelength that food is medicine.
Absolutely, yeah. That famous Hippocrates quote, "Let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food." It's just so true. And when you think about it more literally, herbs are foods, and modern medicine, a lot of drugs that we take now, prescription drugs, actually come from herbs. Like, for example, aspirin is really high in salicylic acid, and how they discovered salicylic acid was through things like birch and willow and meadowsweet, which naturally are really high in the chemical compound salicylic acid. So even modern medicine, even pharmaceutical medicine, has its roots steeped in herbal medicine. So it just goes to show that food and herbs literally are medicine in every sense of the word. So it's really amazing.
And isn't it crazy that either, whether it be, I'm going to say, dandelion that we mentioned there very recently, or the cleavers, or even nettles that we're going to touch on and expand on a little bit more, are often sprayed with the likes of harsh chemicals with a knapsack, all the periphery edges of your gardens, I'm going to say the patios, or anywhere you see one coming up. There's so many benefits to them, and that's probably one of the worst things you can possibly do. If you see someone spraying, or if you've done it in the past, I'd highly recommend to stop doing that because glyphosate is one of those things that's a known carcinogenic. And the idea is we need to eat and the best foods we possibly can and know that, okay, that also the definition of a weed is a plant in the wrong place. So cleavers is actually a plant. Nettles, also a plant. And anything else that's grown for the benefit of your health.
Yeah, like the most pestilent weeds, more often than not, are the most beneficial herbs. And the reason why they're pestilent or known as herbs that you can't get rid of is because they're the ones we really, really need. It's like nature really trying to give you a hint, like, hello, like this is, I'm trying to give you this to help you. It's for the benefit of you, but we're just so blind to that. And it breaks my heart when I see people out spraying the likes of dandelions and nettles and chickweed. People absolutely hate chickweed. It's one of the best herbs for your health. There's just not enough understanding around the benefits of herbs, I don't think. But gradually, slowly but surely, I really do think that we're coming back around to that kind of need and want to live in sync with nature, which naturally is helping us to become more in tune with what herbs can actually help us, as opposed to just appear to be a pestilent weed. So it's really nice to see.
Totally. Maybe even further expand on the benefits of like your chickweed. That's kind of, I suppose, something that I see on a large, a huge basis, being someone who grows a lot of his own food. I would love to even you to, again, the whole thing about it is I don't know everything, and that's why I bring on guests and experts in their field, such as yourself. So the chickweed.
Yeah, so chickweed is, well, it's another lymphatic cleanser, but it's really, really amazing also for skin complaints. So anybody who has eczema, psoriasis, hives, acne, anything relating to skin complaints, chickweed would be my absolute number one go-to. So that would be, using it internally, and maybe I would make a tincture with it or a tea with it, but you can also use it in a culinary way as well. So you can, if you gather up your chickweed and rinse it, it will wilt in the same way as spinach wilts. So you can just, toss it in with your roasted veg after wilting it for, a minute or two in a pan. It's so easy to do. Another thing I like to do with it is to freeze it so that I can have it year round, and then I can add it into smoothies and things like soups, stews, things like that all year round if I have a supply of it in the freezer. It's also really good. So it helps to move interstitial fluid from underneath the skin. So again, any type of fluid retention or even fluid retention from an injury. Say if somebody got a sprain and their ankle kind of swole up because of that, chickweed is really amazing for bringing down swelling and wounds as well. So yeah, it's another one of those spring herbs that is really here for a reason. It really helps to kind of clean the whole system up, because at the end of the day, what's happening on the skin is a reflection of what is happening inside. So if you are somebody with skin complaints, it's nature's way of telling you, inside we need a little bit of house cleaning done here, we need some detoxing done here. And chickweed is just a real expert at doing that, which is why it's associated with good skin health as well.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely love that. And I'm going to say this might be a selfish question to ask me. I know when we previously last met, you were doing a course or had previously done one in relation to identification of symptoms either on the face, whether it's dry, I'm going to say forehead, or symptoms located just below the bridge of your nose or anywhere else on your face for that matter. What would a couple of those examples may be that are a sign of issues that resonate on the skin or the face more so, especially the skin being the largest organ of the body. And then, as you mentioned, what happens in your gut is then signified on the likes of any area across your skin.
Yeah, so well, this was a beginner's introduction to reading the signs of the body with a herbalist called Margie Flint. She's an American herbalist and she's absolutely amazing. If anybody wants to look her up, she is incredible. So I did an introductory course with her and she taught us things like, for example, underneath your eyes. So a lot of people will have dark circles under the eyes, and sometimes that's hereditary. Say, for example, if you're from a Mediterranean country or somewhere in the Middle East where your skin is naturally more olive toned, then you're more likely to naturally have those underneath your eyes. So if you're somebody of that ethnicity or with that skin tone, it might not necessarily be a sign that there is anything going on inside the body that needs to be addressed. It might just be the way that your skin is. But if you're somebody like me with pasty white Irish skin and you have circles under your eyes, pay attention to the color of the circles. So if the circles are kind of purpley bluey in color, that is a sign that the adrenal glands are working a little bit too hard. Maybe you're burning the candle at both ends. Maybe you're spreading yourself too thin. You're just not really looking after yourself. I mean, we all know this already. We all have seen cartoon pictures of people with big purple bags under their eyes, and we know that it's a sign that they're exhausted or a bit wired, but it really is the truth. So if that's the color of the bags under your eyes, you need to kind of just look after yourself a bit better, avoid the sugar, avoid the caffeine, definitely, and do things to really nourish the adrenal glands. Licorice is an amazing adrenal tonic, so get yourself some licorice tea. You could go to a herbalist and get yourself a licorice tincture if you wanted. Another color to pay attention to would be brown. Sometimes people will have this kind of like creamy brownie, kind of almost like the color of a tea bag stain underneath their eyes. And that is a sign of congestion in the large intestine. So typically this would be seen in people with very sluggish digestion, very slow moving bowels, things like that. So if that's the case, then we would be looking at trying to help clean up your colon and get more fiber into the diet, get more water into the diet, get more things like flax seeds and chia seeds, things like that, that really help to lubricate the bowel and give you a quicker transit time. That's what we'd be doing if we seen those types of marks under the eye. So those are just two examples relating to the eyes. There is so much more, and we could turn the whole entire podcast into that if we had more time, but I'll leave it at those two examples for now.
Yeah, and that's it. I might even have you on for a part two. The whole idea of it is there's so much to talk about. And do you know what I mean? It's a massive area of interest of myself, most certainly, I suppose, and anyone else who wants to be healthier. It's skin health. And again, that is, as you mentioned, as a massive result of the food you consume on a regular basis. And the better your gut health is, it has an effect on your skin health out the other side of it.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. And the gut is something that's a real buzzword now. Everybody's talking about their gut health. And yeah, part of learning about holistic healing is learning about how all the different organ systems interact with each other. And it's absolutely dumbfounding to learn how much of an influence your gut has on the rest of your health. Like every single ounce of your serotonin is produced inside your gut. And as we all have heard of before, serotonin is that happy hormone, that neurotransmitter that allows us to feel joy and happiness, allows us to sleep properly. That's all made inside the gut. And you have more neurons in your gut than you do in your whole entire spinal cord. 70% of your immune system comes from your gut. The health of your gut will control the outcome of cholesterol in your body. It's so unbelievably important. And that's something that I really try and get my clients to focus on, is looking after their gut. And it sounds complicated, but really the easiest way to do it is to just eat healthy foods, you know, lots of fiber-rich foods, lots of real food, food that didn't get fluffed and puffed and put into a packet before you ate it, you know, keeping it simple. It's really, really easy to do.
Yeah, that hasn't, I'm going to say, an ingredients list that is longer than your two hands combined, over 10 ingredients on any one item. Like, get back to a single ingredient, an apple, an egg, a piece of meat, a potato, all those things, great for you. People sometimes are afraid of all those different things. And it's the idea of understanding foods before you pick a diet. One of the biggest things I would stress to so many people that listen to this show and or that would talk and come to my any events that they would have a chat with me about health, because again, so, so important that you're eating the best foods you possibly can. So I lean towards maybe another common, I'm going to say weed out there, like willow herb. Yeah, commonly.
Okay. Yeah, willow is, everybody knows the willow. It's one of the most beautiful trees that we have here, but it's a really amazing herb that we would use for pain relief. So anybody with the likes of rheumatism or arthritis or back pain, bulging discs, anything like that, it's absolutely brilliant as an anodyne in herbal medicine. An anodyne is basically just a fancy word that's given to something that helps to relieve pain. It's also a natural anticoagulant, so it helps to prevent blood clotting, helps keep your blood nice and fluid. So those would be kind of the top reasons why we would be using the likes of willow in the clinic. Every herb has a whole host of indications that it can be used for. And it's because with modern medicine, usually the medicine that you were taking is kind of more or less one single ingredient, like one chemical constituent that helps with that one particular ailment. But because a herb or a plant or a food has hundreds, if not sometimes thousands, of different chemical constituents in it that are all working in synergy with each other, that food or that herb or that plant is most commonly known for one thing, but there might be literally 50 other things that it can help with as well. And that's because of the kind of harmonious relationship between all the different chemical constituents inside it. So, I mean, I could go on about other things that willow is used for, but those would be the absolute most popular reasons why you would use it.
Yeah, totally. Fair play. And then leaning on to that classic one that we're going to expand on a little bit even more, the most common, nearly known to man, woman and child, the stinging nettle or nettle.
Yeah, so nettle has kind of become my, I feel like nettles have become part of my identity. It's kind of funny. If I'm out for a walk and I walk past a bunch of nettles, I nearly want to stop and say hello to them, because I've just done so much work when it comes to nettles. So I did my whole 10,000 word dissertation was on just nettles, and I could have written another 10,000 words, to be honest, because there's just so much that it's useful for. So I'll start with how to use nettles at this time of the year. So we are still at that stage of spring where it's still quite wintry outside. It's still quite, we're still getting the odd frost, things like that. We're not getting much fresh leaves and fresh shoots just yet. We're a couple of weeks out from there. So at this time of the year, the energy of the plant is very much still in the roots of the plant, because the temperature hasn't leveled out enough for the energy to get back up into the top of the plant. So now is the time where you would go and harvest your nettle root. And for anybody who's ever tried to dig a nettle up before, they'll know how difficult that is to do, because the roots grow in these huge, big, tangled nests. Yeah, which is why people really, really don't like nettles, because if you want rid of them, they don't make it easy for you. So if you're feeling energized and brave, get your rubber gloves on and go out and dig up some nettle roots, and just make sure you give them a good scrub, like wash them and chop them up into smaller pieces and leave them somewhere to dry. So spread them out on a bit of newspaper and put them into the likes of your hot press or something like that, or into, even I sometimes will dry herbs in my car. I'll put them into a paper bag and leave them hanging off the back of a car seat if I've run out of space in my dehydrator and my hot press. And once they're dry, you need to make sure they're absolutely bone dry, because you don't want them going moldy. Then you'll have them year round. And roots, because roots are so hardy, they don't really infuse the same way that leaves do. You need to be a bit more aggressive with them. That might be the wrong word, but I mean, you just need to do a bit more work to get the medicinal qualities out of them. So what I would suggest doing is, if you're making something that takes a long time to cook, so say for example, if you're making a stew, or you've got something in the slow cooker, or you're doing a soup or something like that, throw your dehydrated nettle root in with it and let it simmer with it for the whole time that it's cooking. Say whether that's an hour or 2 hours, or if it's in the slow cooker, a full 6 to 8 hours, and you're extracting all the medicinal qualities of the nettle root and infusing it into your food, which again reiterates the whole message of food is medicine. So what the nettle root is good for is, it's really, really good for lowering cholesterol. It's anti-tumorous, so it's really good for treating any type of unwanted growths in the body or on the body. And it's also really commonly used to treat benign prostatic hyperplasia, which is shortened to BPH, and essentially refers to whenever men experience enlarged prostate and might have symptoms like frequent urination during the night or even during the day sometimes, which can be a massive annoyance. So nettle root is really, really good for that purpose as well. So if you or someone you know kind of ticks any of those boxes, then go out and get your nettle roots. And it's a little bit more work than the likes of the cleavers, but it's definitely worth it if you have the time to set aside to do it. So that's the root. And like I said, just to reiterate, you really need to make sure that it is bone dry, because there's nothing worse than going through the effort of harvesting something like roots, not drying them properly, and then 3 weeks later you go to use them and they're all moldy. So drying is of the utmost importance.
Yeah, definitely. And ways of drying them is putting them into your shed, as you said, dry them in your car, they have no problem there, and or yeah, any dry house that would literally be able to produce the moisture in those, because as most of Jeanette said, point is, nothing worse than, I suppose, going to the effort of harvesting and having them moldy as you go to put them into a lovely maybe bone broth or stew out the other side of it.
Yeah, oh, a broth, actually, I forgot to mention that. That's really good that you mentioned that. That's one of the best ways to extract it. So the longer you decoct a root for, the more concentrated the medicinal properties will become. So I forgot to do dosage, actually. So you wouldn't really say, if you're making a pot of stew for like 6 to 8 people, you wouldn't really add more than, say, 2 heaped tablespoons of dried nettle root to that. That would be plenty for something of that size. So yeah, you can also, if you want to get really fancy, you can buy yourself a dehydrator. If this is something you think you're going to really want to invest your time into, you can get fairly decent ones. There's loads of different places online. I'm sure there's probably, you know, an electrical store near you somewhere, wherever you are, that just does them as well. But I have one, and I have to say it is well worth the money, in my opinion. So that's something else to consider if you don't want to use your car or your hot press.
Totally. I know you were touching on, I suppose, maybe the next thing is we mentioned is the likes of the leaves. New leaves is what we're looking for, with plenty of vigor and growth. I'd love to even for you to go into the further expansion of, there are a lot of nettles that will be feet high and people are cutting them, and it's more so the older ones that have negative benefits. And it's always well worth firstly pointing out what to do as well as not to do.
Yeah, so the leaves, we'll be able to start harvesting the leaves now, kind of mid to late spring, right up until kind of mid to late summer. So when you're harvesting the leaves, you need to make sure that you're harvesting the new leaves. So the new leaves are the leaves that will grow at the top of the nettle plant, and they'll be smaller than the leaves beneath them. So over time, nettles start to produce a plant constituent that can increase the uric acidity inside your body, which can lead to things like calcification, so kidney stones and gallstones, things like that, which we obviously want to avoid at all costs. So be really careful when you're harvesting your nettle leaves to not harvest the old leaves. And the easiest way to avoid that is to just make sure you're only exclusively picking leaves from the top of the nettle plant. Don't pick leaves from the base of the plant or the middle of the plant. Just stick to the top of the plant. And that's where you'll get your nice, fresh, new leaves that have all the medicinal qualities that are going to benefit you without posing any risk of calcification. So that's just a really important rule of thumb to get across before anybody goes harvesting.
Definitely, yeah. And suppose the idea then, even for a grower like myself, nettles can be used as a high nitrogen liquid feed. Cutting them, again, it's typically just the general rule that I was using myself was new shoots. Again, if you weren't consuming them for your own meals, it would be something that's steeped in a bucket 24 hours later, liquid feed to anything that needed a bit of a boost in the polytunnel raised beds or anything else in between.
Yeah, absolutely. And they give the same benefits apply to us as well. The reason why they're such an amazing fertilizer is because they're so nutrient dense. So it has the same effect on our bodies that it does on the soil. It really deeply, deeply nourishes us, cleans us, and supports us in so many different ways. So when you're harvesting your leaves, they're so diverse. So you can, again, similar to the chickweed, I would just use nettle leaves in the same way that I would use spinach. So I would just go get a load of fresh nettle leaves, rinse them, and just wilt them and have them, you know, I'd even wilt them in with a load of spinach and kale and have a kind of green saute with weeds and vegetables and have that on the side of whatever it is I'm eating. And you can also juice nettle leaves. So if you have a juicer at home, throw some of them into your juice. I like to sometimes add the leaves into a blender with just a very, very small amount of water and blend until you have this kind of paste consistency. And I would scoop that into an ice cube tray, leave it in the freezer. And then again, all year round, I have the benefits of my nettle leaf. I'll just pop a few of those cubes into smoothies, soups, stews, anything like that. And the benefits of nettle leaf is mostly comes from the fact that they're so mineral dense. So they're really good for supporting your skeletal system. So this is particularly important for women who have lower bone density than men. But of course, it applies to men too. But they're really high in calcium, manganese, boron, all the minerals that are required for healthy bones. Because of their mineral density, they're also really beneficial for your hair, your skin, your nails. This is another thing that I learned from Margie Flint. A lot of us do know this already, though, but if you have those white flecks on your nails, you know, it looks like almost little
Tipex.
You know, like some, it looks like Tipex on your nails. That is a sign of mineral deficiency. Quite often, silica and zinc will cause that to happen on your nails. And if you have those, or you're somebody who chews your nails, that's a sign that your body is craving minerals. So you're eating your nails to try and get minerals back into you. That's a sign that you could really benefit from nettles. And heat does not destroy the mineral content of nettles. So you can have nettle tea, nettle leaf tea, and not need to worry that the boiling water has destroyed the minerals, because minerals are heat stable. Same goes for when you're sauteing it or adding it into hot food. You're not going to destroy the medicinal qualities of the nettle. So you don't need to worry about, you know, having to eat a bunch of raw nettles and sting them out of yourself. That's not how you need to do it.
Yeah, because sometimes I suppose people that wouldn't have ever had them or consumed them before might be afraid they might get stung if they actually are consumed. But even that, I put it to the test last year doing a couple of different grow your owns, because someone said to me, you can eat them raw. And I said, oh God, how in the name of God are you meant to eat them raw? But there's a fair old trick to it. And on the first time I said, yeah, no bother. I just caught the nettle, And as you well know, the typical stings are located on the top of the each one of the nettles. I folded it in, consumed it, took a couple of bites of it, and tried to swallow it as quick as I possibly could. I did it the first time, no bother. But the next time, whatever way I did it, it caught me on the inside of my cheek.
Oh no!
And I was talking for the rest of the day. Oh my god! But you know, it's nothing. But yeah, don't try that at home. This is not medical.
That's it. Well, in some ways, you know, that actually brings up the topic of urtication. So urtication is using the nettle sting for medicinal properties. So for its medicinal properties. So that's whenever you literally sting yourself with nettle, and the formic acid that is released into your skin from the little tiny spikes on the needle, the little tiny spikes on the nettle, actually it's released into your bloodstream and has really potent anti-inflammatory effects. So by stinging yourself on the inside of your mouth, as unpleasant as it was, you were probably doing yourself some sort of a favor at the end of the day. Yeah.
I would know growers and individuals would be quite holistic based. They would at the, I'm going to say, start of the season, get themselves, you could call it a mini vaccination, running their hands into a handful of nettles, not jumping into a nettle patch for that matter. Just build up your tolerance. And as a result of that, the stings that you would get on an occasion, whether you're walking through ditches or hedges or even out on a walk, don't seem half as bad once you get the sting at the start of the season.
Absolutely. And nettles are really high in quercetin as well, which is why they're so amazing for the likes of seasonal allergies. If you suffer from hay fever or you're allergic to animal dander or anything like that, if you suffer your way through spring and summer sneezing and coughing and spluttering from all the environmental irritants, nettles are absolutely the number one herb to go to help to treat that. And that's probably why, you know, growers and farmers would kind of sting themselves with the nettle, because it does work in topically as well as internally to help to really modulate the immune response inside your body that makes you more prone to allergies. So that's another reason why we use nettles. There's really nothing they can't do, to be honest.
So there, if anything, there's your takeaway pinpoint golden nugget here today. Nettles are high antihistamine foods that you can consume from your back garden, wherever you're listening to this, and put into a cup of hot water, put in with your bone broth, your stews, or anything else you're putting in the slow cooker to gain the advantage of not having those runny noses, rubbing your eyes till they're literally nearly red, like raw, like Rudolph's red nose at Christmas. So there we go. I suppose, Janet, I just really appreciate you even coming on and taking the time out, especially on the likes of Bank Holiday Weekend when we're recording this. That's just going to put that in there because that just shows the idea of, okay, passion and drive that you have. And I'm sure we're going to hear your name more and more mentioned throughout the likes of 2024 and on into the future.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for having me. It was really, I can't believe it's over already. I'm like, no, we have so many more things that we need to talk about.
Oh my god, I know. But here, I'm nearly sure that with the listeners, I'll be having you on for a part two. We can further expand on maybe another different area, and I'd love to have you on. We can try organize that very soon.
Yeah, I'd love that. Absolutely.
No problem at all. But just before I leave you go, I would love you to even mention where's the best place for people to get in contact with yourself. If they want to hear or know more about either any talks or events or courses that you are going to be doing in the future.
No courses coming up. The talks are funny. So I always say, no, I don't like public speaking. I don't want to do that. But anytime I get asked, I always say yes. So if I do get asked and I do say yes, I'll be sure to let you know where or when that talk is going to be. And you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. And I have a website as well. And they're all under the name of The Monaghan Herbalist. One word. So the website is www.themonaghanherbalist.ie, and that's where you can make bookings for consultations and get more information about what exactly herbal medicine is and anything else that I do. And then the Instagram and the Facebook are kind of more just for fun. So yeah.
Right, brilliant. And I'll put all those, I suppose, in the show notes, and people can get in contact with you if they want to book in for a consult, and or stay tuned for different events, talks that you certainly will be doing in the near future. All right, thanks so much. Yeah. And I always end these podcasts by saying stay tuned, stay classy, and keep it organic.